Hello and welcome to Sound Advice, Entrepreneurs Unfiltered, the show that brings you insights and stories from the UK's most inspiring founders. Today's guest is just the most extraordinary woman. Pippa Murray started her nut butter business from her kitchen table 8 years ago, having never started business before and with no experience in the food and drink industry yet. Pippa Nut is now the fastest growing nut butter brand in the UK. She's here to tell us how she did it. Welcome, Pippa.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming. And I want you to take me back because it was the heady days of 2015, is that right? And you were a marathon runner, a very hungry marathon runner. So how did you come up with the idea for Pippa Nut?
Yeah, you're right. It was about 8 years ago that, or even 9 years ago, that I had the first idea for the brand and very much was inspired by my running. You are also very right that I was a hungry runner. So I'm a real foodie at heart and have been since, you know, I was really young. And, you know, I live in London. It's a great melting pot of food, you know, inspiration generally. But certainly the inspiration came, I think, specifically for this product range was linked to the fact that I was running lots and naturally looking for kind of sort of protein and natural sources of sort of fuel for my training. And I guess as a foodie, I also wanted something that was really delicious. And nut butter and peanut butter was always my go-to. And it was funny because back then, this particular category looked quite different. The landscape was very kind of beige and browns, and it was a lot of the products that I picked up had palm oil in, you know, from a kind of sustainability perspective and the health perspective, it's not a particularly great ingredient. And a lot of the products that I found, you know, either were really Americanized, quite processed, or just quite health-led and not really appealing to a kind of more a foodie like me. So yeah, I think I just saw, it's an interesting one, isn't it? When you look at kind of launching a brand and a product range, is that you can either reinvigorate a tired category that hasn't had a lot of love and bring a fresh perspective to it, or you can, I guess, create a new one. And I chose to kind of reinvigorate a dusty space in store. So yeah, that was kind of like the seed of the idea, or the kernel of the idea. And yeah, I kind of started from there really. And like you say, took it to my kitchen as an initial first step. And I think that's brilliant thing about food and drink is that you can start it in your kitchen, you can create the physical product yourself and recipes, and started how I knew how. I started in markets and started selling it at Maltby Street down in South London for a few months just to test the waters. So yeah, a lot of the recipes and, you know, things that I created in my kitchen back then still exist today, but it was my first kind of, I guess, minimal viable product or basic kind of thing that I could get out the door to get an idea that I had in my brain to have a more lifestyle kind of flavor-led, innovative kind of brand that was still healthier and better for the planet.
But what made you think, oh, lots of people want this? Because it's one thing having your own set of needs and your own tastes and making something for yourself. But what was it that kind of gave you the eureka moment, oh, it's not just me, it's loads of people who would love to try something like this?
Yeah, it's funny that I think it's often a few things that like inform a gut feel. Like a gut feel is normally something, is always something that's built over time. It's not just like an instant light bulb moment, like some people say. So for me, this particular product and why was it exciting, I think generally there was a rise in protein, and there still is that massive protein trend that still exists today. And that was sort of really starting to kick off that kind of wellness life, kind of wellness scene, you know, in and around sort of London, but more broadly in the UK. But also there were other little things happening in the food and drink space where, you know, there were things like the sugar levy, where they were taxing fizzy drinks as an example. So sugar was becoming a lot more demonized, as it should be. But also fats were becoming more accepted. So good fat sizes, so things like avocados and oils and nuts were becoming things that were being encouraged from a nutritional perspective. So there was naturally things that were kind of bubbling up on the surface that helped lend itself to nut butter and peanut butter being a trend. And then I think the funny thing, I think, is in the kind of food world that we are in at the moment is I think people are more experimental than they've ever been before. And I think peanut butter has always been around, or it's been around for a really long time, but only in the last sort of 10 years have people seen it as something that they could put into their porridge or into their smoothie, could, you know, bake with it, as opposed to just always having it on toast and always seeing it as something that was unhealthy. So I think it was having a bit of a, it was starting to kind of, I could see it popping up on my social feeds, for instance, in people's meals and like, you know, particularly kind of more health conscious people. And it was sort of stuff like that, that I was like, actually, I think there's a bit of a trend that's happening in this space, but nobody's doing it well. The existing incumbent brands are a bit kind of haven't really, you know, jumped on this opportunity. And then, yeah, I think really that was the point of going to markets. Like, I think it's a really great thing to test and learn. And one of the best ways of doing that is to literally stand at a market stall and try and sell the product that you're making. And yeah, I just got amazing feedback. I think that was the kind of initial validation I needed to take a bigger leap, which was to scale it up. And, you know, people would come back time and time again. I would initially get some people like posting, and I even in those early market days had people reaching out like Selfridges saying that they wanted to list the brand, and that was quite organic. So there was stuff that was coming up when I was testing it that I was like, you know, I think there's also a bigger opportunity. Of course, you can also get look at data, which is, I did look at a little bit of data, but when you're really starting up and you're tiny, you often don't have any money. And so data is a expensive thing to buy, so you kind of have to use more of your kind of cues that you're seeing in and around the market.
And was there anything that people said to you, maybe these repeat customers at the market, that got you to change anything about your recipe or about your range? Looking back, was there anything from that kind of customer interaction that ended up having a big impact later on in the business?
Yeah, I think there were little tweaks that I certainly did. I mean, it was always I think there was things around kind of some of the flavors that I created. Some don't exist anymore, but it was certainly that there was an appetite for something more than just a straight up peanut butter. I also found it was interesting, didn't necessarily change anything, but it certainly informed that gut feel around people not really knowing that palm oil was in a lot of products. And certainly all peanut butters at the time in supermarkets contained palm oil. And as soon as you explained also what palm oil was and why it was perhaps that's something you wouldn't necessarily want to choose to eat, that also kind of like, there was a kind of aha moment. And again, I guess from a kind of purpose and impact point of view, a reason why your product should exist, and has certainly informed, I think, longer term, you know, my passion point around making sure that when we create new products and that all of them have that sustainability and health in mind at the absolute core of what we do. So certainly it kind of gave me that motivation to create a brand that had really good intentions behind it and was looking to kind of in our specific category at the time, like revolutionize the way that people thought that food needed to be, which was, you know, at the time processed foods were more accepted, and, you know, actually more natural options were only really just coming into store, and really that was what I wanted to get on board with. So yeah, small tweaks, but mainly it was more almost like understanding the consumer a bit better and understanding that there was actually a need and a bigger movement that I wanted to tap into.
Because that's really key, isn't it? Because we're looking at this sort of perspective now, 2023, and all brands are thinking about their social impact, their environmental impact. It's like a massive deal for all businesses of all shapes and sizes. But back when you were starting, it wasn't like that. Like, what has become a juggernaut was just like peeking through. So do you feel like that's partially why your brand has grown so swiftly, as you were almost ahead of your time in the kind of building blocks, like the ethical building blocks that you put in the company from day one?
100%. I think that really appealed to more discerning shoppers at the time. And I guess, you know, as a result, you know, these really great quality ingredients. It is a more premium product than what was existing before. And I think it also, from a taste perspective, was a happy surprise for a lot of people who were used to kind of very kind of either quite bland products or very sweet and sugary and quite, kind of not particularly nice textures. So I think, again, it was a combination of the two, which is, I am a firm believer that people shop by taste. And when you're buying a food product, the number one thing you want it to do is taste amazing. Like, and then health and sustainability comes second, maybe third. So I do think you have to win the hearts and mind first through that. And I think as well, from my perspective, I'm always keen to, from a brand positioning point of view, be you know, we're quite a playful brand. We're not particularly preachy when it comes to health or sustainability. But, and I think that's a big part of it, which is I want people to really enjoy their food. I want the packaging experience to be a fun one, and I want the product inside to taste amazing. And then it's almost like an added benefit that it happens to be good for you, and that actually we are responsible in the way that we do business. So I think it helps you step aside from maybe your competitors, and that helps when you're talking to retailers, or that helps when you're talking to investors maybe. But from a kind of consumer point of view, perhaps at the time, really taste was the number one, and that's really what helped us fly. And then it was the aha moment when people learned a bit more about us.
Interesting. And you mentioned the packaging, and the Pip and Nut branding is just so fun and memorable, and it sticks out on the shelf. How did you achieve that? Especially because you've had that branding pretty much the whole way through. So when you were a startup, probably didn't have a lot of money. How did you make that amazing design come to life?
Yeah, I mean, that was a really big part of, I think, why we've been so successful, is the fact we have such a distinctive identity. And it was definitely, when I was starting out, you know, I admired brands that have that kind of emotive kind of playfulness and the ability to be able to be a bit more expressive in your kind of tone of voice and your visual world that sits around it. So I was really keen that if we don't have any budget really for marketing, your packaging and your brand has to work, you know, 10 times as hard. So I am a believer that if you invest in that initial brand, especially when you're a food brand, you know, that is it's a solid investment, especially if you don't then change it later down the line. So whilst it seems extortionate or pretty expensive when you're looking at investing, you know, quite a big chunk of your startup capital in it, I think it pays back in the long. It's the best bit of investment that you'll make in the long term. So yeah, I can't lay claim to it, but in terms of actually the physical drawing of it, I worked with an amazing agency, and they actually became investors in the business as well, which helped support how I could, you know, have such lovely branding. They helped invest in, and you know, they took shares in the business, and I got some of the branding pro bono. And so, yeah, it was, I think, a really important decision at that really early stage, and it's paid back for sure later down the line.
And how did you get into the supermarkets? Because we always hear these sort of horror stories from up and coming food and drink brands, and they're like, buyers are so busy, they don't answer the phone, they don't answer emails. And yet you were kind of in Selfridges and Sainsbury's, I think, within the first couple of years. How did you do that?
I don't know if it helps or makes anyone feel any better, but it doesn't really get any easier as you get bigger. It's still just as hard sometimes to get in front of buyers, especially when we're launching new stuff. So you have to be pretty tenacious and also never take it personally if you don't get a response, because to your point earlier, like, they're probably just busy. They've got 50 emails that came in of all from different brands trying to sell them something. So you are one and amongst them. But I guess my biggest tip in terms of how do you like get into retail and how do you start to build into those bigger retailers, you know, Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda's, is that you have to prove your case. Like, you have to try and get evidence points as to why your brand works. Because if you think about it from their perspective, they're taking a big risk on you. You aren't necessarily a safe bet if you get into 400 Sainsbury's stores. You have to be able to give them reassurance that there's going to be the pull through. So we did that, I guess, by building the brands slowly at the start. So winning the likes of Selfridges, you know, winning Whole Foods, you know, creating that test bed, but also starting to raise awareness of the brand in sort of smaller retailers. And then using the proof points that we've demonstrated in those retailers to then sell it to the next slightly bigger retailer. So then you might talk to Ocado then might help me leapfrog into Holland & Barrett, and then Holland & Barrett might lead you to Sainsbury's. It's just kind of the journey that we took. So yeah, that I think is a key one. But I have to say, sometimes it is just having a good buyer that gets your brand. And, you know, Waitrose is an example that took us 7 years to win that listing. It would have been my first choice. You know, I would have loved to have achieved a Waitrose listing in day one, but it took 7 years of knocking on their door, despite the fact we had all this success in the wider market, for us to eventually land it. And so sometimes it's persistence. You just have to keep coming back time and time again and know that maybe the next time there might be an opportunity for your brand in store. So hopefully that might reassure some people who are still sort of trying to get that in from those big retailers.
And what did you do when you were finally stocked in like a proper like high street supermarket? Because I can imagine if it was me, I'd be like straight in there to the aisle, getting my products out, saying, hey guys, if you tried this, like, did you feel like tempted to go and be like filling people's trolleys?
Oh my God, 100%. I mean, I remember that actually the email that I got when the buyer confirmed in Sainsbury's that we got the listing, and he was like, you're going three products in 400 stores. And that was the big listing in Sainsbury's. And I honestly nearly fell off my seat and definitely like celebrate those wins, because it's just hard. Like, you know, you might as well celebrate the highs and market. But for sure, like, you know, when you get that first listing, firstly, making sure that you actually get the stock into store on time for the date that they need it, job number one. But then job number two is like, right, it's in store. How are you going to get it off shelf? And I think that is when you have to go hell for leather in terms of raising awareness. And, you know, in those earlier days, that could just be using your network to raise awareness. And obviously, you know, friends, family, everyone that you know tried to go in and pick up the store products and take pictures of your shelves. But then obviously you can use sort of wider tactics around social to really start to engage your social community and tell them about your brand being in store, as well as using other things in store to help raise awareness, whether that's doing promotions or trying to get extra feature space in store, which might be those gondolas as an example, to try and get people to see your brand and be as disruptive as possible. So yeah, I think that's where it comes down to, like, having really solid foundations which you're building on, which is make sure you've tried to build your brand before you get into that big retailer. So it's not just, you know, this big moment and you're launching and you haven't done any awareness driving activity from a marketing point of view. And then second is make sure your actual proposition really stands out. Your packaging is clear in terms of one key USP that you're trying to, you know, sell to the consumer, and make sure it's really, really kind of stand out versus what else is in store. So if you get those things right, that will really help. And then having the right price point as well, like make sure that you know where you're trying to position yourself, and use promotions to not, you know, flog it, but to help encourage someone to try it for the first time. And if your product is superior, then they should come back time and time again. And that's how you slowly recruit people. So, but yeah, what day one, obviously go in and take a little selfie in front of the shelf and send it to everyone that you know, to say like, you finally made it into the supermarket. It is the most amazing feeling, I have to say.
Oh, amazing. And then, so you were sort of the pioneer of this new take on nut butter, but then have you found that rivals have come into the space, and how does that complicate your ability to grow and stand out?
Yeah, I think definitely there's lots of brands that have popped up over the years and certainly sort of keep us you know, hungry in that sense. I always think a bit of competition is good, like, firstly because more people are talking about your category, and in our case, obviously, peanut butter. There's lots of people shouting and talking about it, and that helps drive the trend and makes, you know, consumers aware of it. So it's not always a bad thing that there's like other brands that are appearing. But then I think it's about, you know, if you are seeing other brands sort of start to kind of edge in a little bit, it's about making sure that you do everything to the best of your possible ability. And that's obviously all for the consumer. Make sure that your product is genuinely the best. And then I think it's also about making sure that you're doing a job when it comes to marketing, like making sure that people, because you can't pick up or buy a product if you're not even aware of it in the first instance. So that's where, you know, using your story, getting press, or like I said, social, or maybe there might be kind of bigger activity like events and sampling that you might want to do to kind of help people creep in. But I think it's funny because I always get a bit dilemma about this sort of thing around, should you watch your competitors, like how much to follow and kind of keep an eye on them? And my personal view on it is that just to ignore them, like keep focus on what your brand stands for, look forwards instead of backwards, because, you know, that's going to help you, I guess, you know, drive forward momentum as opposed to trying to like constantly, you know, do something or copy someone else to make sure that you're trying to stay ahead. And I find that that creates a better mindset in my mind. and means that I enjoy it a bit more as well, rather than always comparing and despairing and thinking, oh God, like maybe we need to like do this and that to help keep us differentiated. So I follow none of our competitors on social media. We do buy some data so we know what they're doing from a sort of overall market perspective, but I don't really pay attention to them because I kind of think we're a really creative team. We've got a really great brand, a great product. Like we've got all the things in front of us that should lead to our success. So let's focus on us as opposed to them.
You don't want to accidentally be influenced as well, because something that they might think is a clever marketing ploy or ingredient or something, and it might feel like it's inspiring you, but actually it might be a wrong decision. It might just lead you astray. So I totally get what you're saying. And have there been any like disasters along the way, like any dark moments in terms of the growth of the brand or your marketing, or has anything gone wrong?
Where do I start? I mean, it's funny, I know I mentioned earlier that like amazing moment when you get that email from the buyer being like, you got the listing, you're going into Sainsbury's. And I remember when I did get that, it was almost the next day when I actually worked out how much that would cost us to buy the stock to send it into all those stores, and realizing that that would mean that we didn't have enough money basically to pay for that first production. And I remember it being that kind of like proper high and then plummeting low as you then try and like scrabble around thinking, how the hell am I going to actually afford to buy this stock and meet the demand that is suddenly being pulled through? So that was an interesting one, which had to scrabble around and knock on a few investors' doors to ask for some help. But then I think the hardest thing has been, and it's probably quite consistent if you talk to any food and drink founder in the last 5 years, it's been a real brutal environment to kind of exist as a food brand. And certainly I remember Brexit being an absolute head-in-hand moment when that got confirmed, because we bought all of our nuts and at the time some of our products from Europe, nuts were from America and Argentina, and we were really exposed from a foreign exchange point of view, and I just remember seeing the pound just plummet, and at points reached almost parity with the euro, and being just devastated because it completely wiped out our margin and all that hard work to get the products there. We just, you know, I was really concerned about what that meant for us as a business long term. Has recovered a bit now, but we've had to kind of be really smart in the way that we've had to kind of get that back to a better, more healthy place. So yeah, I think that was always sticks out as like a really kind of memorable moment. But I think what you kind of learn when you have Brexit, then you have COVID, then you have Ukraine war, and obviously the implications of inflation and cost of living in the last 4 years, is that this is just what food and drink is, and it's, you just have to learn how to be resilient and build. I'm quite an optimistic person, so I always tend to round up instead of down. And so it's helpful, I think, having people around you that maybe aren't the quite same mindset to help balance you out, and know that try to be slightly more, it sounds not very fun, but like kind of sometimes a bit more prudent in the way that you might plan, whether it's for like marketing investment and things like that, so that you're not exposed every time that there's a shift in the macroeconomic space. So I think you learn to ride the waves, and weirdly, some of those awful moments, like I said, Brexit, or when you, do a faulty packaging run and you realize that everything that you printed is wrong, that's happened before as well. You learn to kind of become a little bit more, they kind of learn to give you a bit of that duck on water feeling, like you kind of are less reactive every time something bad happens, because you know that this is just something that you have to kind of manage, if that makes sense. So yeah, there's not many things that keep me up at night now, because I think we've been through probably some of the worst years that I hope that we experience.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But what about cash buffers then? Do you try and always make sure you have a certain amount of cash in the business, like enough to cover salaries for X number of months? Or is that impossible on your margins?
No, absolutely. We always try and keep at least sort of 6 months runway in front of us when we look at our and now look at being, you know, profitable as a business. So I think, yeah, in the early days, though, you are sometimes hand to mouth, and you are literally watching every pound that comes in, and you chase everyone to pay you, and you were really careful about what you invest in. And I used to be so frugal when I was managing it. Like, there is nothing more kind of awakening when you see the cash in the bank. So keeping really close to it. And then, you know, now as a team, like, we're still a really small business, I have a mantra of, like, treat every penny like your own. And I kind of, you know, tell my team that, because you want everyone to feel there's that kind of care and attention to, you know, the business as you do. So yeah, and making sure you don't get above your station and think that you're all comfortable when you get a little bit bigger, because yeah, there can be shockwaves that happen down the line that you just can't predict.
Yes, and the last few years are definitely testament to that advice. And you had never started a business before Pip and Nut, and yet you've made such a success of this. So how have you learnt the sort of practical skills about growing a business, like reading accounts? Like, how did you teach yourself all of that? Did you have people you could turn to help you with that?
Yeah, the thing that I actually love most about it is when you learn something new. And I love throwing myself in when you don't really know anything about, you don't know what all the acronyms are, and you have to figure it all out. For me, it's like this amazing puzzle that I want to solve. So I really thrive in those moments. But yeah, I mean, I did everything from, like, a basic accountancy course just so I understood what a balance sheet was, which is definitely not my, like, passion point. But it's kind of good to do it. But to be honest, I think a lot of it comes from learning through, you know, doing. Some of it's quite practical. You know, the first time you work out how to pitch to a retailer, you know, you're learning a lot, and you ask, you know, industry friends or peers to be able to kind of share a bit of how they might do it, and also get, you know, yourself a mentor. I think they can help coach you and teach you what you need to know. And then before you know it, you're kind of off and you're sailing. And then I find now it's like, you know, I've got a really great team. There's about 25 of us in the business. And, you know, I've got people that I kind of learn from them now. So it's great. You kind of get those experts in, and then suddenly, like, they transform your business in different ways. And it's, you just learn with them as well. So I think, yeah, it's a bit of being a bit humble and being open with what you don't know, and just saying it how it is and asking the question and not being afraid that's even now I'll ask some of my team when I don't know something, like what the answer is, and I don't feel embarrassed about it, because we're all on a journey and nobody's an expert in everything. So there's always going to be gaps in your knowledge, and that's why you have great people around you. And it's also in some ways why it's a good thing. Sometimes you don't always assume that things have to be done a certain way, so take it as a strength as much as also something that you might need to kind of, you know, continually kind of develop yourself over the journey.
I love that, to keep refining, because if you keep asking the question, you might keep getting a new perspective and you might find a better way of doing something and making a tiny improvement. And I love your attitude towards mentors, and you've mentioned mentors being useful, and I'm sure I've read you quoting David Hyatt from Hyatt Denim. He was on the show last season. We loved him. But was he a mentor? And how do you find great mentors?
I wish. If you can link me in with him. He is like my, you know, pin-up startup founder. So yeah, I love him.
I'll link you up.
Thank you. How do you find them? I think asking around is a good place to start. When I was starting out there, I did look at kind of who were the brands that I were like, they are just flying and just loved what they were doing, and who therefore is running them and or founded them, depending on what stage they're at. And that's how I came across my mentor, and now he's our investor as well, a guy called Giles Brooke, who ran at the time Vita Coco, and also worked on another brand called Bear. And yeah, literally just emailed him, and I did that with quite a few people. Some people I just asked for advice, and some people like him I approached in a more concerted way and said, would you be open to, you know mentoring me and potentially investing later down the line. And it works really well, I think, when you find somebody that is certainly ahead of the game and experienced than you, but not so, I said, you know, not too big business that they can't really apply their learnings, or they don't get that you need to be kind of scrappy, and that's okay in those early days. So finding the appropriate sized, been there, done it person. And ideally, if depending on your background, I think it's all about, you know, in my case, I didn't have any food and drink experience, so I needed someone who did. Some people might find that they just want marketing experience and therefore they find someone that's an expert in marketing, but it doesn't need to be in that sector. So I think it's about knowing what are your gaps and therefore what do you need to kind of fill through advice. But I think the thing with mentoring, it's like I found over the years, is it's not to say that everyone will need to invest in your business to give you advice. I think you can go for lots of coffees and get advice informally. But if you really want like lots of coaching and you want to maybe have models shared with you or templates, whatever it is, if you want more hands on, I think it has to also be potentially something for them as well. Otherwise, they won't maybe be as open and sharing. So I'm not saying that everyone has to give away necessarily equity, but that is one route. Or you could look at, you know, a NED structure where you actually pay someone for their time. But I think before you do any of that, it's obviously do test the water and, you know, get a feel for each other. Is it something that you're both enjoying? So that's the case, I think, for like more kind of mentoring that I've found. But obviously, you know, even my team, we link up with other fellow brands. Some of my team members have kind of mentors in other businesses. And that's just a nice informal kind of relationship where both people are hopefully getting something from the conversation. But yeah.
Yeah. And you've come such a long way as a brand. But where next? Like, what is the next mountain to climb for you guys?
Yeah, so lots of things, really. I guess Pip and Nut, we started with Nut Butter, and that has been our heartland for like the last 8 years, been living and breathing it, and still will, obviously, over the next few years. But really, I think, you know, Pip and Nut, it's, you know, anything nuts is really an opportunity for us. And I guess our reason for being is that we want to create products that are healthier, less processed, natural, and sustainable, as well as obviously delicious. So really that leads us into lots of different avenues. So, you know, we've got our range of nut butter cups at the moment, and we're launching a new range in Q1 next year. So that's coming out soon. So innovation is a big part of, like, I guess what we're going to be working on over the next few years to hopefully, I guess, bring our brand into different moments in people's lives, but also, grow as a business. And then we're looking at also a little bit at international, but to be honest, focusing a lot on the UK because there's just so much opportunity just here. And then I guess from a personal point of view, I recently actually became a trustee of B Lab, which are the charity that's behind B Corp. So B Corp is a really big passion point of mine, and really thinking about, given all the things that we see in the press at the moment, you know, the climate issues, how we as a business we can genuinely lead by example and do as much as we possibly can to minimize our impact. And I think this is for me like that new learning wave where all the time learning different things about carbon, you know, whether that's net zero, carbon neutrality, or working out how can we grow nuts in a more regenerative way. Those are all things that we're sort of trialing at the moment and investing in. So again, that's sort of a really interesting part of the brand that and how we're kind of building it behind the scenes to make sure that, I guess, in the future, you know, our brand isn't taking from the planet, but hopefully enhancing it. That's a second thread that's really interesting for me.
Do you think that the climate change issues are so much more real to you because you're exposed as a business who sources nuts from all over the world, South America, America? You feel it maybe more than someone that's like insulated from what's going on or just sees it on the news. You actually can kind of almost see it in the figures on your balance sheet. You can like see it, hear it in the voices of farmers that supply you. It's just different for you.
100%. You have that extra kind of step closer to the source. And I think, you know, any food is grown either in the ground or on a tree, that is in an environment that will be in a climate and therefore will be in some form or another impacted. And yeah, so you can't ignore it. You just absolutely can't. And what I find really motivating is that whilst I know the news can be pretty depressing at the moment and pretty horrific for people that are actually in those countries that are having such big heat waves and fires and things like that, is that actually I've got the opportunity through my brand to actually do some positive action. And I actually find that highly motivating. Whereas I know sometimes it can feel a bit like, oh, what's the point of just turning off the light switch? It's not going to make a difference anyway. But actually changing on a bigger scale how our brand works, you know, removing bits of plastic that are virgin plastic from our supply chain genuinely has an impact. And I find that really satisfying. And I think my team do as well, because you see it immediately helping and improving. So yeah, it's actually for me a bit more empowering than it is scary in that sense.
Yeah, you are an agent of change rather than sort of having to sit back and just let it all happen. You can have an impact. That's amazing. Pip, it's been so lovely chatting to you. I could keep you here all day. I really could. But I think that's a really lovely high point to stop on. Thank you so much for coming along today and making the time.
Absolute pleasure. It's been so nice catching up with you.
Well, that was epic. An absolute masterclass in building a brand. Follow Pippa Nutt on Instagram and Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now, at Pip and Nutt on TikTok. And my word, the videos of the oozy peanut butter being poured on all the conceivable puddings are insane. It's at Pip and Nutt Official. Thank you again to Pip for being an exceptional guest. And listeners, thanks for tuning in. Come back next week for more sound advice.